You're listening to a Prairie Punk House Companion right here on the Prairie Punk Press Network. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 2 of a Prairie Punk House Companion. I'm Neckbone.
And I'm Jerry Bear.
Yeah, this episode we're going to be talking about how we discovered punk music and how we kind of discovered the scene and what led us to where we ended up. Do you want to just jump right into your story?
Sure. My first exposure to punk rock was probably this girl at summer camp had a Suicidal Tendencies tape, and it was probably 1988 or so. I think that's probably when it was. And it was institutionalized. And, you know, it was great. And then, you know, I was a metalhead. So, in like, third grade, I got into, like, Motley Crue and Poison and stuff. Faster Pussycat. And then, in 88, Appetite for Destruction gained wide mainstream popularity. So I listened to that, and that's, you know, sort of what I was into for most of my childhood. And then I got more into Lights, Camera, Suicide came out by Suicidal Tendencies, and that was regular on my playlist, but, you know, that was more of a thrash album than their punk rock roots. But I didn't really get into punk rock until high school. You know, I was a metal kid and then got into hip-hop, and then as cheesy as it sounds, but I imagine it's true for a lot of people in our age group. Doogie came out, and I was curious about that. It wasn't my favorite thing, but I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then my brother was like, oh, if you like Green Day, you should listen to the Buzzcocks. So I listened to the Buzzcocks. And then I never bought the Doogie album. I went to a record store and looked for it. They didn't have it. All they had was 1,039 smoothed out slappy hours. I got that. And then my buddy was like, one of my friends from high school gave me Punkorama Volume 1, which is the Epitaph sampler. And that was it. I mean, I listened to that and I was like, I want to find out everything there is to know about punk rock, and I want to listen to all the punk rocks. You know, that began my search to find more aggressive, more underground, and more like heavier punk rock. And, you know, back then it was a little bit difficult. You know, we didn't have the internet, and my family was poor, so we didn't even have a computer at our house. So we had to look at the liner notes to find other bands. So in the thank you sections of liner notes, you know, they typically thanked bands. So I would go to the liner notes, look at the thank yous, and then go out and look for those CDs, and then look at the liner notes of those and get those CDs. And, you know, so it started off Epitaph Records and then Fat Records. And then, you know, I think everybody, when they're first discovering punk rock, has an exploited stage. You know, I was just always looking for something harder and heavier, and Epitaph didn't really offer much in the way of, like, hardcore punk. And I was always searching for that. I would read Heart Attack Hardcore zine and see a lot of these bands, but I could never find their records anywhere because the record stores in Wichita were pretty sparse on what was available. We did have a pretty decent place called Yesterday's Discs. So I went there and asked for punk rock, and they gave me a Crucifix CD. I found the Dead Kennedys from them. And then I eventually met my homie Justin, and he was into, like, crust punk and anarcho, and that kind of opened the world up to me. And basically exactly what I was looking for. All the crusty shit, all the anarcho shit was what I was looking for. And, you know, I finally found it and felt at home with that music and in that scene. And just kind of went from there. I guess that's the brief history of it.
I remember yesterday's discs. Like when you said that, I was like, yeah, that was the store to go to compared to, I mean, I went to Camelot Music a lot just because that's what was served to me at Town East Mall.
There weren't really any punk rockers at my school, at least that I knew of. It had a lot of diversity, but there was like a lot of rich kids, a lot of poor kids, a lot of gangs, but none of them seemed to be punk rockers really. So I was kind of on an island searching for it. And until I found some other friends who were into punk rock, I was kind of on my own. You know, I'd run around causing mischief, and I had a mohawk. I was a tall, skinny kid, and you knew a tall, skinny kid with a mohawk.
The other one. The other one in Wichita. Yeah,
I called him Mohawk Jake. He must have been causing mischief too, because there were multiple times where I was out and about and cops would come and accuse me of like riding around on a bicycle throwing beer bottles, and I was like, I don't even have a bike, so I only had to assume it was Jake.
Probably.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. I got harassed for like 20 minutes, and I was like, nah, it's not me. There's another dude in town with a mohawk. He's tall and skinny like I am, and it wasn't me. I've been sitting here. And they, searched my car and all the shit and just harassed me.
And just for clarification, for anyone who doesn't know him, Jake, if we say Jake or Oren, that's the same guy. he kind of did a little rebrand, I guess, at some point after high school. So he goes by Oren now, but when we refer to him in the past, we'll probably say Jake just because that's what I called him back in the day. But yeah, if we say either Jake or Oren, that's the same guy.
In the 90s in Wichita, there weren't a lot of punk shows. You know, there was a venue called Howard's that it was an all-ages venue for a while. I only went a couple times.
Very familiar. I was there every weekend. I was at Howard's like every weekend. I'd get off work at Pizza Hut and I would throw whatever like messed up pizzas into the trunk of my car, I'd go to Howard's and I'd give people pizza and go in and hang out. And yeah, I was the guy who showed up with free pizza.
Nice.
I mean, it was Pizza Hut pizza, but yeah, still, it's free. So
the first time I went there, I saw Vint and Scythe, and I'm not sure who else, but Vint blew me away because, like, it was the most hardcore thing that I had seen. I would say they were kind of a hardcore band, or at least hardcore adjacent. And yeah, I was blown away by it and wanted to go there all the time, but I didn't have a car at the time, so I was kind of stuck doing what my friends did at the time, drinking rum, which was fine with me. But you know, it would have been cool to go to more shows at Howard's back then. There was a huge ska boom in Wichita, and by the time I was driving, the only real shows that were going on were ska shows, and that's where I met Justin and kids like that, because there were other punk kids around town. I was like, hey, you have a mohawk, I have a mohawk, we should be friends. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I met people in the scene, and then, you know, hanging out with them more, meeting more people and that sort of thing. So I met Justin and we decided to start a band, and I met the Fannings, and they're twins. One is a bass player, one was a drummer. I convinced the bass player to play guitar because I played bass and he is a musical savant, so he can play whatever. So he played guitar, the other one played drums, and Justin sang and I played bass. And we had one of the worst names probably ever, called Uncle Scam. And
I've heard worse names.
I think
it wasn't great, but it is. It's what you'd expect from a bunch of high school students.
Yeah. They're in the word uncle, it was a K instead of a C because that was edgy or something. I don't really know why we went with a K, but we sure did.
yeah. So all those new metal bands in the early 2000s were just ripping you guys.
Yeah. I mean, this was 97 when we did that. So
you did it first.
We did it first. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uncle Cracker or something like that had a K2, I think, and that was really embarrassing for us. So we played shows around town. There wasn't a lot of venues and stuff. It was kind of hard because we were in high school, so we couldn't play bar shows. Or it was just after high school. Justin was in high school. The Fannings and I were out of school by that point.
That's right, because he's a few years younger than us.
Yeah, he was 3 years younger than us. So he, I think he,
that's right,
he was a sophomore or a junior. So we played a lot of shows, and we wound up playing almost every show with this hardcore band who I found out later, they thought they were the only punk band in town at the time. That was the Omega Men / Hitman Union. They changed their name from the Omega Men to Hitman Union at some point.
Yeah.
So we played all our shows with them, and we kind of had like an unspoken rivalry with them because, you know, they thought they were the punk rockers. And then we showed up, and we all had, like, they just kind of looked like indie rock nerds. And we showed up with our leather jackets and our mohawks and like spiky dog collars and just very silly and punk rock. Like, look up punk rock on the internet, it will show, you know, pictures of us. It's just,
they were more ridiculous. Like part of like the skater crowd, weren't they? If I remember right.
I know their drummer was a skater. But they were all like hardcore kids and shit, so I don't know. So we played lots of shows with them, and we wound up being friendly with them, and, you know, Torn wound up being one of my best friends and was the best man at my wedding years later. We've been in several bands together since then. There was a band called the Hardcore Motherfuckers that we played with. And their bass player was this black chick named Gina with really long braids, and anytime Nazis showed up, she would get in their faces and like be just as fucking in their face and trying to fight them as much as we were.
I'm pretty sure I've met her before.
I'm sure you have,
especially in the punk scene in Wichita. There's not a lot of black women with dreads in the punk scene in Wichita.
Yeah,
in fact, there was probably, especially at that time, exactly one, and it was her. So I've definitely met her before.
I'm sure. And we changed our name a couple times. It took a minute for us to get one to stick, but the silliest one was Tofu Love Glove.
Oh, God, I forgot. I think I remember you telling me about that.
But then we decided on Man is a Bad Animal because that sounded more serious. And we were going much more in like the darker, crustier, sludgier direction.
Didn't you get that from a movie? That's from a movie.
No,
isn't it?
It's from Dead City Radio. William S. Burroughs is reading some of his poems behind a jazz band.
Oh, okay.
So
that's what it is.
One of the poems is called Kill the Badger. And the last line is, as Brian Geisen said, man is a bad animal. It's still great. I listen to that track pretty often. Just because it's so fucking good. We moved up to Kansas City, and I didn't really do much as far as being in a band or anything up there. I was mostly just drunk all the time because
we just kind of hung out and drank.
Yeah,
we lived kind of paycheck to paycheck, and just kind of spent whatever extra money we had on alcohol and at the time cigarettes too.
So. Yeah, it was rough. I mean, I did a lot of panhandling back then for booze, and I mean, I was blacked out drunk the majority of the nights just because it was a dark time. It was rough.
I think other than Wild Oats, I don't think there was a single job that I kept for more than a couple of months at a time. I would just kind of move from job to job, minimum wage job to minimum wage job, just whatever, you know, would get me through the month, basically.
Funny story, my boss at Wild Oats was a punk rocker. She was a little bit older than us, so like a scene or two ahead of us, but she knew like Brandon and like all those like slightly older than us punk rock kids. And one time she I was super hungover. She came up to me and she's like, dude, you fucking reek. Like, at your lunch break, you need to go take a shower and change your clothes because you smell like booze. She's like, I understand it happens. Yeah. This is my least favorite part of the job, but like, go get cleaned up on your lunch break.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, no worries. Okay. Yeah. I think I'd been wearing the same shirt for like 3 days, and I'd been at the Central House a lot during that time.
Which was just one of the most disgusting. Well, I'm sure we'll get way more into the Central House later, but that is one of the most disgusting. I think, I'm not sure which Central House was more disgusting, that one or the one I lived in.
I mean, I didn't go to the one you lived in, so I would have to say the Central House one.
The first one? They had a functioning bathroom, though. We did not have a functioning bathroom. That was a problem after a while.
Towards the end of that Central House, you had to go outside. I don't think their toilet was functioning either.
Yeah. Well, I would just, if it was, you know, if it was number one, I would just go out to the yard.
Yeah.
If it was number two, I worked at a video store that was half a block away and I had the keys and the code. I'm not kidding. I would go there at like 2 a.m. and be like, oh man, I gotta drop a deuce, man. And I would run down to the video store, turn off the alarm, unlock the door, and I would just go use the bathroom down there half a block away. So super easy.
Just want to interject real here that we're both parents now, and using the descriptor of number two for taking a shit is something that a new parent does. So, you know,
that's absolutely true. My son is in his parrot phase, so I'm always extra careful about what I say and how I refer to pissing and shitting. But he's in bed, so I guess I can say pissing and shitting right now. I don't think he can hear me. Until tomorrow, when he starts saying things that I'm saying right now.
I think the night before that, I would have to imagine, was one of the nights where I fell asleep with beer on my lap and just spilled it all over myself, and then woke up because I was cold and wet and drank my beer and walked home.
I remember several times where I would grab a can of beer that I thought was my can of beer, and I'd take a nice hearty swig, and it would turn out that was the cigarette can.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, for those of you who haven't really spent any time at punk houses, what you do is, so you get your cigarettes, and you finish one beer, you drink one beer, and then that becomes your cigarette can. Sometimes it's not completely empty. Sometimes there's skunky old beer at the bottom of it, a little bit.
You got to put the cherry out somehow.
Yeah. And you drop your cigarettes in there for the night, because, I mean, you don't have an ashtray, and... Most of those houses, oddly enough, those punk houses, so many of them had wall-to-wall carpet, which is just an unfortunate choice.
Yeah, well, I think most houses back then did. I don't think people appreciated hardwood floors. But I also don't think that punk rockers would be kind to hardwood floors in a punk house. I mean, the pirate house floor was hardwood floors, and it was really fucking rough. So.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. What you do is you put down some cheapo linoleum on there, let the punk rock kids just absolutely obliterate it. And then whenever they move out, you just replace the floor. It's cheap.
In Lawrence, I was in another band for just a brief moment. We had one of the most ridiculous, pretentious names I've ever heard. It was called That's Not Fair to the Universe or the Molecules.
I remember that band. I remember making a lot of fun of you for choosing that name.
That was my name.
That insanely pretentious name.
The name I came up with, it came from a thing that I wrote after reading Dennis Leary's last book. And I was overly enamored with the universe and space and our position in it. So, you know, the thought was we perceive size in comparison to our human existence. That's so little of what's out there because our perspective is ridiculous compared to the smallness of molecules and the vastness of the universe. So... That's where the name came from, and we were equally as pretentious with our instrumentation of the band. It was bass, violin, drums, and vocals. It was fun. We had like 5 songs, and we only played 2 shows.
I think I was at one of those shows.
Yeah, it was my birthday party, and Element came up from Kansas City, played my house, and then we played the Pirate House the next night, I think.
I'm pretty sure that I was living in St. Louis at the time. I think I drove from St. Louis
to
come watch you guys play. Yeah. And then I hung out, didn't go to bed. I just stayed up all night drinking.
Yeah.
And then I had a class. I was going to St. Louis Community College, and I had a class. So I got in my car after a night of drinking and drove without sleeping from Lawrence, Kansas, back to St. Louis, Missouri, which is like...
6 hours?
Was that like a 5-hour drive?
Yeah, 5 or 6
hours. It's about 5 hours, yeah.
Yeah. So then... After that, I was in a joke band with some people I worked with, and we were called Sexplosion, and that had three X's in it. And we played one show with your joke band at the Rainbow House. Yeah. I don't remember what your joke band was called, but we had a battle of the two bands that night.
And I was trying like hell to remember the name of my band, and I can't for the life of me remember it. I think it's on a flyer somewhere that I might still have. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So after that, I came back to Wichita, and I started a band with one of the Fanning twins and some other people I worked with. And we were called Spirit of the Stairs. And it was like a post-rock instrumental noise band. The closest thing I can compare it to would be like kind of like Explosions in the Sky type of thing that was pretty big back in the early 2000s. So I was in that band from 2003 when we started it until 2008 when I quit because I had a family. I was starting a family, so I couldn't focus the time needed for a band that was that serious. And then in 2017, I started a punk band again. It was called Object with an exclamation point at the end. And we were getting ready to play shows. We had a good six songs written, I think. And then I was in that band with Israel from the Omega Men Hitman Union. And he got into a car wreck and died. And that kind of took all the fun and excitement out of that band. So we just kind of quit after that happened. You know, some points of interest along the way. I remember listening to 120 Minutes, and not, this isn't punk rock, but it, you know, it's punk adjacent. We kind of talked about this the last episode. Sonic Youth, the video for Bull and the Heather was on 120 Minutes on MTV back in the day. And it excited and frightened me because I'd never heard anything like that before. The dissonant guitars and the just so weird and creepy sounding, and then the video with Kathleen Hanna dancing all over the place, just kind of being weird.
That was the first time I'd ever seen her. I had no idea who she was.
It was,
I mean, I wasn't even into punk when that album came out. Like, so like Bikini Kill was not on my radar, and I was just like, who is this band? I assumed she was part of this Sonic Youth band that I had also never heard of at that point. But yeah, same thing. I was just like, what is this music? What is happening?
Yeah.
It was terrifying.
It was very like weird and like a little bit scary, but like in a good way. I totally liked it and I got into Sonic Youth and some other indie rock stuff around that time. You know, the whole grunge thing happened, and like everybody, I got the Nevermind record, and you know, it didn't last on my playlist very long. I kind of got sick of it. You know, before I found punk rock, I listened to a lot of rap and hip hop because that was kind of the thing at the time. You know, I never felt like I fit in with people at school, and I tried really hard and made myself fucking miserable. And like I said, I was poor, so I couldn't buy like name brand clothes that all the cool kids had. And, you know, I got made fun of for having cheap shoes and, you know, fucking shitty clothes and stuff. But I tried really hard to fit in, like all through middle school. And then once I hit high school, I stopped giving a fuck. Started shopping at thrift stores, intentionally finding the ugliest clothes and the silliest way to look. So like even before I got into punk rock, I was trying to be a weirdo. And then once I found punk rock, that was it. I started spiking my hair, wearing dog collars, you know, being as outlandish as possible. And like once I discovered punk rock and found out there was like an entire movement of people that were intentionally like not fitting in, I felt at home. And it made my life a whole lot easier.
The whole dressing thing. I had a little bit of different experience there. I wanted to dress, well, probably more metal at the time, metal/alternative, but definitely grew up in a very different household than you. I had very conservative parents. They're very religious. And they basically told me what I could and couldn't wear. My parents desperately wanted me to be a preppy. I don't think the kids use that term anymore. But that's basically somebody wears a polo shirt and khakis everywhere they go, like tucked in. Maybe the sweater around the collar. I don't know. Is that too stereotypical?
I mean, it sounds like the 90s.
So, yeah, my parents wanted me to look like that. They wanted my hair to be cut short. And even as recently as a few years ago, I remember, I think I was still in my 30s at the time, but it wasn't that long ago. I remember my uncle saying something to me because I was visiting family. I still wear like graphic tees and hoodies and jeans and shit. I basically have dressed the same way like since I was in high school or since I transferred to public high school anyway. Yeah, and he said, you know, at some point you got to start dressing like an adult. You can't just wear graphic tees and hoodies and jeans forever. I'm north of 40. I have a professional job and I still dress like this. So who says that you have to dress like you're on your way to the yacht club to look like an adult? That's a weird mentality that older generations just can't seem to let go of.
Yeah. I think that's changing a lot. Like I work in a professional office setting as well. I work in an engineering office and the majority of the people there wear jeans and t-shirts. So, you know, luckily it's not khakis and polos in professional settings anymore.
I mean, I work in a blue collar environment. I have a white collar job in a blue collar environment, but yeah, like they all dress like they're, you know, jeans, t-shirt. I mean, they're there to work, turn wrenches and stuff.
Like, yeah.
They're not dressing like they're on their way to the yacht club. I didn't really play in as many bands as you did. I was kind of more of a, I hung out in the scene and I went to go see bands. But I never learned an instrument well. I played guitar, in a couple of bands. And, I remember Jake and Aaron McDonald started a band and I played guitar for them, for a little bit. And before I had a guitar, I was the quote unquote dancer. So I just go there and I just practice and I would just like dance or some shit. I didn't have an instrument.
Aaron McDonald filled that role for Uncle Scam a couple times. He played trumpet and wore red footy pajamas. And we opened our set with the intro to the Final Countdown. So he would play the guitar part on the trumpet as well. So that was fun. He was our dancer one night.
Yeah.
At the bingo arena, I think it might have been when the Nazis showed up. He was on stage. He went to Dylan's and spent like $100 on enemas.
Interesting.
So he was on stage.
The most interesting part is that he had $100.
I think he got it from his folks.
Okay, fair enough.
I would assume. I don't know. Maybe selling drugs. I'm not sure.
Maybe. Allegedly.
Right. So he was throwing them out into the crowd, and I think it probably pissed off the bingo arena because everybody was just squirting enemas everywhere.
It's a party. Yeah. Sure.
Crooked Grin, is that what you were talking about?
Well, I'm going to go back as far as I can to the beginning. And it's interesting because I've also always been interested in broadcasting. I don't think I necessarily wanted to be like in a band. I think I wanted to work for a radio station that played punk music. Which, you know, good luck in Kansas finding anything like that. But oddly enough, I got my desire to want to broadcast from Rush Limbaugh.
What?
Who I used to listen to with my dad all the time. We'd drive around the car listening to Rush Limbaugh. And I absolutely loved him until Kurt Cobain died. And I don't know if you remember when Kurt Cobain died.
I do.
The day after he died. Rush Limbaugh said he was, I forget the exact quote. I mean, if you want to know, you can Google it. Like it's online. He basically said Kurt Cobain was a loser and he's glad he's dead. And it was the day after he died. Like not even like, this wasn't like 2 decades later or something like that. And talked about how glad he was that he was dead. And I was listening to this in the car, and at the time I was a huge Nirvana fan because that's just the band that you liked if you liked bands at mm-hmm. all in the early 90s. And so I think at that point I thought, oh, I don't think I want to listen to Rush Limbaugh anymore. that was my start to politically for me. That's when I started to very incrementally and slowly and over the course of several decades move very slightly to the left every single year until I ended up as far on the left as I am now. But I wonder sometimes, I'm like, you know, if he hadn't made that comment, I wonder how long I would have stayed conservative. I hope I would have wised up at some point, but like that was the first time where I thought like, oh, I think these conservatives are assholes.
Yeah.
Like they're glad somebody died. Somebody, you know, whether you can disagree with his drug use and maybe his lyrics and stuff and say, oh, you know, he was somebody in pain and it's too bad that he, you know, had to go this far. And, you know, I didn't really like his music, but it's always sad when somebody, if he'd said something like that, I would have been like, oh, okay, well, that's
normal. You know, that's a normal response.
Yeah. A normal reaction to somebody dying who you don't even know. Yeah. That was my first kind of step away from that. And I started listening to more music. I was already into Nirvana, but I was still listening to like Bon Jovi and like Poison and stuff like that. The very first concert I ever went to was way before that. It was the Monkees and Weird Al. I want to say that was in 86. Whatever year they came through.
Yeah.
I think Topeka, Kansas.
I didn't mention my first concert. Like I said, I was poor, so I didn't get to do a lot until I started working. My first concert was Candlebox opened for No Doubt and Bush. So that would have been 94, I think.
Oh, wow.
That was my first concert.
Yeah, that's
And then...
Yeah, that's 8 years after my first concert. Yeah, yeah, that's wild.
My first local show was that Vent show at Howard's that I talked about. And then from then on, it was all just like local shows. So, but I digress.
I think my first concert that I went to without my parents, I'm pretty sure... I think I went with Jake. And I'm pretty sure that I lied about where I was going. So I went to go see this band called Sepultura.
Oh, nice.
They were playing at the Cotillion, and that was when...
You probably could have told your parents you were going to see Sepultura, and they might have thought it was...
They don't know what the fuck a Sepultura is. And there wasn't Google at the time, okay. So... Yeah, it was the Satanic Panic, though, and they were a metal band. Yeah. But I remember, I went, and I was dressed the way that my parents dressed me still. I mean, I don't remember how old I was. It was before I transferred to public school, so I was still in Catholic school at the time. We went to a Taco Grande near the Cotillion before the show. Mm. There's a bunch of like metalheads in there because that's just close to the venue.
Was Scythe there?
Probably. It's probably the guy who walked by me and made the comment. He walked by me and it was like, New Kids on the Block is next week. And I was just like, oh, okay. I don't think I understood what he was trying to tell me. But yeah, it was really out of place. That was my first show. I was really into Sepultura, and I got into metal, got into Metallica, Megadeth, White Zombie, unfortunately Marilyn Manson, Iron Maiden. I'd always been into Iron Maiden. That was one of the first ones. Slayer. And it was into like some alternative too. Mm. Like I liked Nirvana, obviously. Mm-hmm. I discovered the Pixies at Boy Scout camp. And that was kind of when I first started getting a little curious about punk, because they had that song on Trompe Le Monde, The Sad Punk.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, yeah, I should probably look into punk rock because I think Pixies are a punk band. And then kind of discovered the, you know, like the Breeders and stuff and kind of that. And I think that's when I discovered Sonic Youth, too. I went to the library to check out some punk stuff. And I was like, oh, I listen to so much metal. I should probably listen to punk because it's just cool. Like punk is cool. Metal's cool. I just transferred to a public school, so I went from an incredibly sheltered life where I'd been in Catholic school my entire life, as little diversity in the most suburban place in Wichita, Kansas that you can think of, and then I was suddenly in the biggest high school in the state, incredibly diverse, thousands of students in an old, un-air-conditioned building in the middle, like right next to downtown. And it was culture shock, absolute culture shock for me to go from my little Catholic environment to public, big, bad public school. And I transferred at my own request. My parents begged me to stay in private school, and they certainly were paying for it and were willing to keep paying for it. I got horrible grades from pretty much from second grade on. So I told them not to waste their money. I was just going to transfer to public school. It was either that or I think I just legally, I think I was 15, which is when I think you could legally drop out of school at the time. So I threatened to drop out of school entirely if they didn't enroll me in public school. But yeah, so I was, this, metal kid who started going to public school, and I started growing my hair out then because there was no more hair standards that I had to live by like I did in private school. Had discovered the Pixies at Boy Scout camp. Yeah, I was still hanging out with Jake, who was, he went to Catholic school, but he had a mohawk. He actually got in-school suspension for spiking up his hair at school. And we still hung out, and he asked me if I wanted to go to the Green Day concert. And I was like, Green Day, they're a little, they're not really hardcore enough for me, but it's a show, and it's in Wichita. A band coming through Wichita was a big deal. Any band. Any fucking major band coming through Wichita was a big deal. Bands never came through Wichita. You either had to go to Kansas City or Oklahoma City if you wanted to see anybody. And so I went and sat in, at the time, Jake, today Oren's car with him. He was really big into punk rock, and I kind of made fun of him for it. And I was like, okay, you like your little punk music. I mean, metal is like a higher level. Punk was like the, yeah, it's what the kids like, I guess. But metal is like what you graduate to, was kind of my attitude at the time. And we were sitting in his car waiting for Green Day tickets to go on sale. We decided to sit there all night the night before for some reason, even though it was, I don't think it even sold out. I mean, this was like before they were mega stars. Like the Dookie had just come out. This was their Dookie tour, but, and they were on MTV and stuff, but they weren't selling out shows yet. But he put in a CD, and he started playing this song that I thought sounded kind of metal. And I was like, oh, what the fuck is this? And that song was Linoleum on an album called Punk and Drublic by NOFX. And it was just enough metal to get me interested. I remember thinking, I don't know about the singer. I don't know about that singer. Like, I thought, man... The drums, like the fucking, the blast beats and like all that shit. And like the metal guitars, the lead guitar, like, and everything about a rhythm guitar and even the bass, which I found out later was played by the singer. It was like, everything else is fucking spot on, but I don't know about that singer. But by the end of the album, I didn't even care anymore. And now I actually think it kind of works for them. I don't think it would work with any other singer. Other than Fat Mike. So, I don't know. Anyone who disagrees can feel free to let me know. But yeah, I don't think NOFX would work without the exact setup that they have for everybody.
I mean, they... El Jefe didn't join until White Trash.
Right, which is still one of their best albums.
He was actually in metal bands before he joined NOFX and didn't even know what punk was.
Yeah.
So that's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. Which is probably why I kind of connected with them and with those guitar riffs. Yeah. And that was the first punk band that I really, really liked. I'd liked the Kinks before that, but not enough to like go buy their album. I was like, oh, that's pretty good. I mean, I think I like the Kinks better today than I did back then.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I think they're great now. I think I thought they were just okay at that time. I had not really refined my palate yet.
Yeah.
So I went to the library when I was a little bit younger than that, wanting to discover punk rock. Checked out some records from the library. One was the Kinks, and one was the Sex Pistols, because those were the two bands I'd heard of. I listened to that Sex Pistols record a couple of times, and I think it was after the second listen I thought, oh, I think I hate this.
Well, they are fucking terrible. Of all the punk bands from 77, why they got as big as they did, I do not know. That are the
Sex is in the name.
Fucking worst, quote unquote, punk band of that time. I mean,
yeah.
It's hard to deny their influence because, like, so many bands that are great looked to them and thought, I can do this too. But Jesus Christ, they're fucking terrible. And Johnny Rotten or John Lydon is a huge piece of shit.
But you said at the same time, like, if not for them, then Crass would exist. And I fucking like Crass.
Yeah, so it sucks.
I guess I can be thankful for that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because without Crass, too, we wouldn't have Rudimentary Peni. Like, I mean, there's a whole bunch of bands that, may not have existed. So I guess it's the silver lining for a shitty band.
The influence Crass has had on punk rock and bringing serious political theory into punk rock is so great. And, I mean, John Lydon writing Anarchy in the UK, like, his own admission was he didn't care about anarchy. He just liked how it sounded. Right. And it fit the rhyme scheme.
Conservatives. Right. It caused the Tories to clutch their pearls.
Which is really all he wanted, though.
Yeah, it's true. But that's all he wanted. He was like, oh, I want the Tories to clutch their pearls. And now he fucking is a Tory. He's worse than a Tory. But yeah.
So I fucking hated
the Sex Pistols, like the Kinks, but was still kind of into metal. After I discovered NoFX that night, though, it wasn't that long after that. There's a few bands I stopped listening to. Marilyn Manson lost their glimmer for me pretty quickly. I mean, their music wasn't really that good. They were a gimmick.
Yeah,
they were a gimmick.
For sure.
That's all they were. Yeah. Still a few bands. I still listen to this day. I still listen to Iron Maiden. I mean, I've over-listened to them to the point where I don't listen to them that often anymore, but it's not because I don't like their music. It's just because, well, I've already heard all their albums a million times, so I need to give it some time. But through NoFX, I discovered, you know, other pop-punk bands at first, like Screeching Weasel. That was Jake's favorite band at the time.
Didn't he have the weasel painted on his car?
He did. And it said Beat Off on on his car, nice. Yeah. It was called the Beat Off Mobile. I think it was a Chevy Nova. It was like a 70s Chevy Nova.
Yeah, I remember his car.
Total piece of junk. I didn't have a car at the time, so he drove me everywhere. Yeah. So it worked for me. Yeah, Bad Religion, Guttermouth, The Vindictives, Vandals. Those were like the kind of pop punk bands those were like my initial bands. And then I kind of like, I discovered like Black Flag, Minor Threat / Fugazi, Dead Kennedys, Propagandhi through Punk. I discovered Propagandhi because of Punkorama. I don't remember which volume they were on. It might have been the first one.
If I remember right, they were on Fat Records, Survival of the Fattest, Volume 2.
Right.
And it was, it was that Nation one. States. Because that's how how I found Propagandhi as well. And, you know, their Epitaph isn't... I mean, Bad Religion's political. But I can't think of many other Epitaph bands that are as overtly political. Propagandhi is not on Epitaph, but that's what I was listening to. And I got that Fat Record sampler and heard Propagandhi, and that was it. I was like, holy shit, they sound like NoFX, but they care about stuff. Because I like NoFX at the time. They were my first favorite punk rock band, and that opening, like the opening to Punk and Drublic with Linoleum is... like one of the most solid openings to a record ever. Yeah. I mean, in my opinion, I'm not even like a huge fan of NoFX. I have very complicated feelings about NoFX, but you know, that's a solid opening to a record.
Punk and Drublic is still on my list of albums that I think are near perfect top to bottom. And also Propagandhi's on that list with Less Talk, More Rock.
That's fucking great.
Near perfect album. I mean, I can listen to those albums top to bottom without thinking like, oh, I should skip this song. Like, it's every song's good. Then I discovered 15, like Flux of Pink Indians and Zounds and Blatts. Because of NoFX, I discovered Rudimentary Peni and Crass. even though they were making fun of Crass, I was like, oh, I kind of want to listen to them. And then I ended up liking them. So. Yeah, thanks NoFX for introducing me to a band that you don't like, but I ended up liking.
I mean, Mel likes them. He was defending Crass.
Yeah, good band, Rudimentary Peni, great band. I think I still have, a bunch of their records that I can listen to top to bottom too, but for the Rudimentary Peni albums, I kind of, to listen to top to bottom, some of them, I kind of have to be a little messed up. Like, I can't be completely sober.
Yeah, some of them are a little much. I like them. Death Church is probably my favorite.
Cacophony is another great one.
Pope Adrian, just the Papa's Adriatus, Papa's Adriatus, Papa's Adriatus through the whole thing just kind of gets to me after a little while. That's there through the whole fucking record.
So if you're so inclined and you're in a good headspace, and you are somebody who eats mushrooms, that's either a great album to listen to on mushrooms or the worst album to listen to on mushrooms. But that's up to you. Howard's was a main go-to for me. We were talking about, you only went a couple of times. I went so many times, and the local bands. So I went to high school with this band called Dirge. Not a good band.
Great name, though. That was sarcasm.
Yeah, yeah. Dirge was one of my favorite Transformers, though, oddly enough. I think that's why I thought I would like them at first, and then I realized I wasn't 8 anymore and couldn't be impressed by Transformer names.
I was too poor for Transformers. I had GoBots.
GoBots, yeah. Did you have like the off-brand GoBots that had the GoBots label on them but weren't actual GoBots?
I think so. I probably had a couple of those, too, yeah.
I had the Rogun guy. Mm-hmm. He had the GoBots label on him. But if you put he turned it to a rifle. Uh-huh. But if you put the grip down and only the grip down while he was in robot form, he just had a giant cock.
Oh, nice.
And Scythe. I remember seeing Scythe a lot.
Yeah, I went to school with one of the guitar players of Scythe. I think that my favorite thing about Scythe is that they didn't know Cannibal Corpse wasn't serious.
The only member of Scythe I have ever exchanged words with at all was Cash is the great drummer. He seemed like a nice guy. I was like, oh, yeah, like I'm not really into your band, but you seem pretty cool.
Yeah.
Dirge opened for them a lot, and I was sort of friends with those guys, but they also kind of sucked. I don't remember why I hung out with them, actually. They were just some of the first people I met in public school, and they were in a band. Yeah. So I was like, oh, I should probably hang out with them. But, of course, then I also met Jeff, and I was like, oh, yeah, fuck those guys from Dirge. I'm just going to go hang out with Jeff. He had a cool car, and he wasn't a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was just way more fun to hang out with. We ditched our school assembly after a girl was murdered in our hallway. This is before a school shooting, so she was stabbed. She was stabbed in the hallway.
There were a couple stabbings at my school, but nobody died. That's fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm. Not too far from my locker either, and I hadn't even been there that long. I mean, I had just transferred. That was my first year from Catholic school.
I'm surprised your parents didn't pull you out.
I am too. I think they knew that I would have just dropped out of school, which, spoiler alert, I did eventually. Yeah, when I hit my second senior year, and they're like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm going to drop out. And I got my equivalency eventually. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was not very serious about school. I thought that I was going to, I don't know, be a famous DJ or some shit. I don't know what I thought. Something, or maybe a famous filmmaker or a DJ filmmaker, maybe both.
Impetuous youth.
That's my story about getting into punk.
What would you say are some of the main bands that influenced you or are important to you then and now?
Yeah, absolutely. NOFX, still listen to. Just saw them in Tacoma just last year for their final tour, which is two years long because it's still going on. Great show. Tacoma is an odd city. As far as I can tell, it's mostly abandoned.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's Washington's second biggest city. I was living out on the West Coast at the time, but I went to Tacoma for the show. And it looks like the set of a movie before they start filming. When they just get it exactly, they had it pristine. There's a little streetcar that takes you between the hotel and the venue. The buildings are kind of nice, but there's not a human to be seen for miles. Middle of downtown, right in the middle of downtown. Supposedly there's a few hundred thousand people that live there. I thought Wichita was dead when I was growing up. Tacoma could really give it a run for its money. So yeah, don't believe the hype when West Coast people tell you that, you know, hey, you should leave the Midwest and come to the West Coast. The West Coast is at least as boring and about 50 times more expensive. Yeah. NOFX. Still listen to them. Still listen to Rudimentary Peni. Still listen to Crass, 15, Propagandi. Still listen to Fugazi. That was one of the first bands I discovered, so I have a soft spot in my heart for Fugazi / Minor Threat. Citizen Fish.
Oh, yeah.
Culture Shock. Subhumans. That whole, are those the same three bands? Yes, no? I don't know. I listened to all three of them.
They
all have a slightly different sound, but yeah, it's a lot of the same people.
So one of the things I'm most excited to talk about on this podcast mm-hmm. is the Citizen Fish show that we went to and the antics that happened then and afterwards. So that'll be a great episode coming up, probably two episodes from now, something like that, where we will talk about meeting Dick Fish and all the antics that surrounded that night.
Yeah, that's I guess we'll have to, including in that show, I'll have to get into all the crimes that have happened to me throughout my life. I think it's a larger list than I ever thought it was going to be.
You could do a podcast just on the crimes that have happened to you.
I know, especially because I've lived in big cities that are famous for crime, and nothing has happened to me. Like, I lived outside of D.C., Baltimore, Chicago, lived in Chicago, lived, you know, Seattle, all kinds of big cities. Nothing happened to me. But man, Wichita, Kansas, Lawrence, Kansas, Kansas City, both Kansas and Missouri. Good Lord. Held a gunpoint, stabbed, shot at, did not get hit, thankfully. Carjacked more than once.
Drive-bys.
Couple of drive-bys. When I remember this joke. So I was a huge Seinfeld fan. Not the individual, but the show. The fictional characters. And there was a scene where Jerry's dating some woman and he's going to his apartment and he says, "Hey, do you ever get out your keys?" And you pretend like there's someone behind you who's going to mug you, so you have to hurry and get your door unlocked and get in before they get you. And her response was, "No, I'm from Wichita." And I remember thinking when I heard that line, clearly the writers have never fucking been to Wichita, Kansas before, because I would feel safer. I've been to New York. I've spent a lot of time in New York. I spent a lot of time in every borough except the Bronx and Staten Island. Honestly, I feel safer in Brooklyn, Manhattan, and Queens than I ever have almost anywhere in Wichita. They clearly have not done their research. Kansas cities are per capita higher crime rates and can be pretty terrifying. So, I mean, I've been mugged in front of my apartment in Wichita before, so I absolutely do know what it's like to get your keys out and try it again because there actually is somebody behind you, Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David, if you listen to this.
I'm sure they do. They're big fans, I hear.
Sure, absolutely. Oh, I guess one band that neither of us have mentioned, I'll probably mention a couple more too, but we haven't really talked about the Ramones. We did briefly in the last one. Not a huge influence on me. Like they were around and I listened to their music and I think I had one of their CDs, like a greatest hits type situation. And I liked it. Okay. I was like, oh, this is pretty good. But like, it didn't really blow my mind. They seem like they're like a gateway band more than anything.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have any history with them.
The Ramones. So I got into them way more later. After, like, I stopped only listening to punk rock, started listening to more indie rock and stuff like that. That's kind of when I went back and listened to more Ramones. Like, I'd always heard the Ramones and known the Ramones. I never really cared about them until later. I was like, you know, oh, yeah, let's listen to the Ramones. I don't know. I, like, enjoyed them more later. After broadening out of listening to just punk rock.
There's the bands I tried to like. I think you mentioned the Exploited. I tried to like the Exploited and Total Chaos. And the Sex Pistols. Those were like the three bands that I kept going back and trying to drink from that well. And I was just like, there's just nothing here for me.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when I listen to that Total Chaos Riot City song. Yeah, no shade. If you like it, if you like Total Chaos and you like Exploited, no shade, man.
Like, yeah, enjoy what you
go
like.
Go do your thing.
But like that Riot City song, they're listing places that aren't cities.
Africa's not a
it's
city.
It's not even it's a country.
A
it's a
it is a whole, it's a continent. Whole continent. It is an entire. It is massive. There's a lot of different countries and cultures and languages and dialects and people and food.
Yeah, just but you know, Riot City.
Riot City. Yeah. Riot City, Africa. Riot City, UK. Also,
not a city.
We're getting closer. It's a country, at least, but not a city. USA, also not a city. LA. They did say LA. Yeah. That's a city. They got that one right.
Yeah, that is. So there was another like smaller punk house next to the pirate house where some women lived, and it was called, they called it the Maxi Pad. And
oh, I remember
Total
that.
Chaos played maybe the Bottleneck or something like that, and they stayed over at the Maxi Pad and hung out, and mm-hmm. I almost went over to make fun of them, but I decided I would just get drunk on my porch instead, but I was pretty close.
I mean, for all, they could be perfectly nice people.
I heard they were very nice. Idea.
Yeah, and that's hey, and you know, there's bands that we differ on. So yeah, that's why I say, like, you know, if we're making fun of a band you like, don't worry about it. Like, go ahead and like them.
I'm not here to steal joy from people. Like whatever you fucking like, but I'm also I also feel free to talk shit on them. Talk shit on anything I like. I don't fucking care.
I still like, you know, fuck, I still like Veruca Salt. I don't give a shit. Like that they were a fucking like 90s alternative band that had a couple of hits, but I have a soft spot in my heart for them. Just from the time and place that I had first heard them. So yeah, I mean, and I'm sure there's plenty of people who could make fun of them, but yeah, okay, go ahead. I don't give a shit. Still like them.
Bands that are still important to me from back then, and that were like milestones for me, was, you know, NoFX was my first favorite punk rock band, and Punk and Drublic and White Trash were huge to me at the time in high school. I went to Warped Tour in 96 and got to see them live, and it was incredible at the time. You know, it was, I'd never been to anything more punk rock than that at the time. Yeah.
I saw you at that Warped Tour. I was there.
I had a big silly mohawk, and it was 150 degrees. It was a good time. Face to Face played, and that was fun to see. Deftones still had dreadlocks, and they played, and I was like, oh, this is silly. God, I remember. So NoFX is the one I was fucking Pennywise. I don't like Pennywise. I never liked Pennywise.
Yeah.
I always thought they were bullshit. I know a lot of people like fucking Pennywise.
They fucking love. And I've seen Pennywise 3 or 4 times, not as headliners, as opening bands. And every time I'm just kind of like, oh fuck, Pennywise. God. And they were right up my alley back then too. I mean, they were pop punk, and that's what I was into. I just never liked them. Just couldn't get into them.
If like a whole band was Lars Fredriksson, and I had to choose between Pennywise and Lars Fredriksson's band, I'd probably listen to Lars Fredriksson's band. Because, you know, I was always looking for, like, heavier, darker, like, tougher punk rock. He played Ass Rash for me, and that was it. That was my favorite band for, like, a long time, just because they were so crusty and drunk and just, like, drinking anthems and chaos. It was great. The Shit Split, still a huge fan of. You know, I waffle back and forth on which side is my favorite. Is it Filth or is it Blatz?
Blatz, man. Blatz all the way for me. Nothing wrong with the Filth side, but the Blatz side is just, to me, way better.
I think that I know back in the day that I liked the Blatz side more, but I wanted to like the Filth side more because it seemed more serious, and I wanted to be like kind of serious back then. But the Blatz side is just so much more fun.
Yeah, if you're gonna play something at a party, you're definitely playing the Blatz side.
Systemic Death from Penis Envy is one of my all-time favorite punk rock songs ever. I can think of very few things more punk rock than Systemic Death. And then Chumbawamba, you know, their first EP, the Revolution EP. Again, one of the fucking punkest songs ever recorded.
And for people who don't know, Chumbawamba used to be a punk band before Tub Thumping.
Yeah, the Revolution EP, I want to say, came out in 1982. And then they did Starving, Pictures of Starving Children, sell records, and that was an overt criticism of Live Aid and Bob Geldof putting together all those stupid fucking concerts for supposedly for children in Africa, while it was really just a money-making scheme for them. So it's a,
how many kids did they help? That's a good head count.
Five. Here's The Rest of Your Life is probably my absolute favorite punk rock song. Maybe at some point we'll make a playlist to share.
What's the thing? What's the thing that we wrap up with? I gotta get a coffee and piss. Is that are we going with that every time?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I do. I am out of coffee and I do have to pee. So I gotta get a coffee and piss.
Please keep listening, because we're gonna start getting into the houses and having on cool guests who may or may not remember some things that we can't. Maybe we'll help us fill some of the gaps.
Hopefully we'll have some people to fill the gaps.